TGIF, another episode of Shield Play, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That is because we got a new episode of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Truth! I am Goo, joined as always by Wesley. Hello.
Yes, I'm the Barefoot Kamwesa today, and we finally have something to live up to our name. I think this worked out. Yeah, it worked out so well.
Holy shit. Week. I was like, so much Shield Play, but they also gave us two other names that we could have used, which is Mutual Friend and Two Guys or something like that. They were talking when, you know, tossing the shield back and forth.
Right.
But either way, yes, Shield Play, tons of Shield Play, shield tossing montages.
It lives all up to that 80s kind of shoot 'em up buddy cop thing, even down to the guitar plucks, which had like a huge Lethal Weapon, even dare I say, in It's Always Sunny Lethal Weapon 5 vibe with that the guitar plucks in the background there. But yeah, so I think a little bit of a different episode here. So I think the first action-packed, tense opening minutes for 10-15 minutes or so were great, but this was the slowest building episode. I think the IMDb ratings kind of show that out. We had been on an upward trajectory all through the first four episodes, culminating with a 9.2. This one's still high with a 9.0 out of 10, but again, a lot of conversation, and it deals with a lot of heavy things. This was the episode that show creator Malcolm Spellman had said was going to really pull on your heartstrings. I think that kind of rung true, although in a different way that we were maybe anticipating.
And he said that this is the episode that he was the most proud of.
Yeah, and I can see that. And we've been waiting to see, you know, when Isaiah Bradley was going to pop back up again and how he was going to do that. And that great conversation that he has in the backyard with Sam about his history and kind of how he's lost, you know, faith in the government and America after he kind of saved them, right, in a great way and saved it, you know. You can kind of understand where he comes from in that point. And it brings Sam full circle, I think.
By the way, spoilers on all of these episodes. So if you haven't seen it yet, you can keep on going if you want. But I would recommend watching the episode first. And I look at this series right now. Obviously, we need to see what happens in the final episode, episode 6. But it's been a real roller coaster of building up the anticipation, giving us that payoff, giving us that quick excitement. And this episode was really that we're ramping up to something big, but we need to see what that conclusion, what that final loop-de-loop is before we can truly, I don't know, grade out this show. Because I still have it, you know, hovering around like an A, but this episode definitely slowed down. Tons of character development, tons of stuff with Sam, but it was 60 seconds long. I'm 60 seconds.
60 minutes.
It was 60 minutes long, and it did feel like it was 60 minutes long.
I agree with you, and I think we're asking ourselves a similar question as we did to WandaVision towards the end, is how are they going to land this plane? And maybe that's one of the bigger – there's a lot of things kind of still in the air. And
well,
again, whether
do you
they have
think there are going to be planes in the final episode?
You know, perhaps. Maybe some wings of sorts.
Oh, wings, you say?
Wait, yo, you forgot the wings.
Cable.
Ooh. That is when Sam took the shield. Of course, the wings were destroyed by John. He took the shield and told Torres, hey, those wings are yours. Does Torres pop back up in the next episode with those wings? Or is it going to be a Young Avengers time when he uses those wings?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one way or another, we're going to see Torres pop back up. And I think he has been a great sixth man, a Nate Robinson, if you will, in this series.
Yeah.
You know, definitely didn't play as much of a role in like the meat in the middle part of it. But I think as the beginning and then apparently the end here, we'll see what happens. But I think that whole fight scene, that opening fight scene that we see between John Walker, Sam Wilson, and you know, Bucky Barnes there, a la Captain America Civil War.
Yo, you saw that Easter egg?
I sure did. And again, that whole battle all right around it, I thought was, again, a great opening. Did the episode live up to it? I'm not so sure. But seeing John Walker rip off Falcon's wings with his bare hands was something awesome to see.
Which is really a reminder to Captain America the Winter Soldier, where it was the Winter Soldier against Falcon.
Yo, you saw that Easter egg?
And he tore off one of the wings. Right here, John tore off both of the wings. And then Sam was still able to use the jetpack in combat. But like you said, this was really more of the Civil War fight between Bucky and Steve versus Iron Man. And do you think that John is going to that shield slam a little too much? Like, that's the only move he knows?
It's a pretty brutal move. And what we know about Captain America, this iteration of him, is he's a brutal version. So I think that's probably just kind of playing into that montage a little bit. But again, you know, it just shows how strong and how perfected that serum was that, you know, John Walker could do this with the bare hands while Sam could do it with his metal arm, you know? And we see him, that metal arm kind of gets, like, electrocuted in battle. And I thought that was going to circle back to that
but
at some
didn't.
Point.
But it didn't, no. I thought even in that fight it was going to circle back where he couldn't use it or something. But what also happened in the fight is they broke John's left arm, which shows that if, say, Bucky was Captain America right now, you couldn't have done that because his left arm is vibranium.
And we find out that he's right-handed a little bit, so that's a nice nod, too, that he doesn't always think to use that, the left arm instinctively there, so which I thought was kind of great. But right after that battle scene, we see everyone kind of break up, right? And we see Sam and Bucky kind of leave on bad grounds, question mark, like, kind of.
Well, yeah, because Bucky kind of leaves the shield for him, much like Steve left the shield for Iron Man.
You saw that Easter egg?
So many Easter eggs in that first scene. But Bucky leaves it there and he's like, this is yours. Do something with it now. But then later in the episode, Bucky does say to Sam,
when Steve told me what he was planning, I don't think either of us really understood what it felt like for a black man to be handed the shield.
So Bucky this entire time was blaming Sam for not taking up the mantle, but then he realizes by the end of this episode where I don't know if Bucky has had the same interactions that Sam has had that Bucky would understand it yet, but they kind of expedite that story to get to that point.
Yeah, and I think maybe they're taking that one instance, that first instance in Baltimore where the mistaken identity and racial profiling of the cops and stuff, and maybe that's just one instance of that. And then maybe just, you know, kind of getting his memory jogged with Isaiah Bradley and kind of having that sort of stuff there. But I think it's kind of interesting, the albatross that the shield becomes, right? It's literally like a cross that Sam is bearing throughout the whole episode because he's carrying it with him in baggage. It's like literal luggage as he goes back to Louisiana, as he goes to Baltimore, and he's kind of still carrying all the baggage and everything that kind of comes with the shield as he's weighing what to do with it. So I think that's maybe a little on the nose, but it was subtle enough where I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, and then right after that Civil War-esque fight, John gets put on trial and becomes a scapegoat immediately.
Yeah, and I thought that scene, again, was very interesting. You saw Sam kind of allude to it right before that whole fight. It was like, you know, they're going to look at your history and kind of give you like a slap on the wrist thing. Mm-hmm. Wasn't exactly that case.
A discharge with no benefits? That's how you create a supervillain. Give them the benefits at least and say, go off on your own and, you know, don't do anything bad.
And again, this kind of comes to like my big idea around John Walker is that he reiterates that he's Captain America throughout the episode a few times, right?
He's losing it, man. Captain America. He's losing it.
Well, he is losing it, but so we know that he's not Captain America in the sense that he's like literally not Steve Rogers, and then he's not like what Steve represents, right?
Yeah.
But he is Captain America, like lowercase Captain America, in the sense that he's a product of
he's Cap'n America.
Yeah, he's busting caps. That's certainly for sure. But of the representation of what America that we find out is like currently happening today, this kind of corrupt government political atmosphere. So I think he's, you know, literally Captain America, whether you like him or not, that kind of like hero you deserve or hero you need sort of thing.
Yeah. And then right after the trial, John's at his lowest. And this is when Elaine from Seinfeld, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she pops up Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, and she is Madame Hydra.
Yeah, this is very interesting. It looks like she could spare a square. She was just handing out a couple of blank business cards there. I was happy I kind of landed that joke. But but she's very interesting. Again, that was the big Academy Award winning actress cameo that we were waiting for.
Was it a big payoff?
Not the payoff, but I think it leads to interesting breadcrumbs to what it could be.
Yeah, but I think the issue with this, once again, is don't tease a cameo. And then if you don't do that, and then she pops up as Madame Hydra, we are then like, oh, cool, this is a new character. First off, it wasn't supposed to be a new character because she is credited in Black Widow. So she was supposed to appear in that, but now it is this first and then Black Widow after. But I think it would have been more interesting if we didn't know that a cameo was coming because now we're saying, oh, wait, that was the cameo.
It's a big deal because it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Is it a big deal because of the character, right? So I think in the movie sphere, right, that's a big deal. But in the MCU world, like, it, you know, is it to the fans there? So, you know, that's a good question. But again, I think, you know, it's kind of a train that's already left the station as far as the hype beast is concerned. And that, you know, we even tempered our expectations coming into this about not getting okey-doked. And even we midway through, we still did. You know, we still did.
Oh, yeah, because we got an awesome tweet. We got an awesome tweet about, hey, what if it's Kingpin, who is blanking on the name?
The power broker.
Is the power broker. Mm-hmm. And that would have been dope. And maybe that might still happen. I don't know. But, like, we keep on setting our expectations too high. I feel like even if my expectations were low, even if you just said cameo, this doesn't really hit me with the cameo vibe of something that's going to get me really excited until we see more of her.
Right. But so, okay, so stay with me here. So for those who you know, had to do the Google search on who Valentina Allegra de Fontaine is, like I did, her comic book history, as Gu alluded to, ties her to Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D., and then she eventually becomes part of HYDRA. She's a Russian secret sleeper agent. That sounds very familiar.
And
right?
Erotic. I mean,
yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Maybe one of those honeypots that we hear so much about. But, you know, that sounds very much like Black Widow. But she also has ties to Nick Fury in the sense that they were lovers.
And
in the comic books, she used to flirt with Captain America to make Nick Fury jealous. And it worked. The two fought over one another. So very interesting stuff there. But again, I think this is all leading up to the MCU's version of the Suicide Squad, the Thunderbolts. And we can talk about that a little bit later as we're getting
talk about that right now, because we're going to get to Zemo, who is back in Sokovia. He is at the grave of his family. Bucky shows up and Zemo's like, hey, you're going to be a killer for the rest of your life. And then Bucky's like, click, click, empty gun. No, I'm not. Dora Milaje's here. They take him to the raft. And who runs the raft, Wes?
Oh, that is my favorite red herring in the MCU. It is Mr. Thunderbolt Ross, Captain General, something.
Dickhead.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. But I mean, again, the greatest red herring in the MCU. I want to pin him on everything. Mm-hmm. And just as I DM'd you before we started this thing, he's actually a red herring because he's the Red Hulk, right? I mean, that makes too much sense.
And Bucky then asks Io for a favor before she leaves. And we find out, and we haven't seen it yet, but it's a suit for Sam, which I think gets back into the whole thought of Tony, Peter Parker, and Siri will be creating all of the suits moving forward.
Sure. Siri would be a nice addition.
No, Siri.
Maybe,
I want Siri to.
Tim Cook.
Siri,
comes into
create
here.
Me a suit.
Yeah, again, I think that's great. I think it's going to be an allusion to that Captain America Falcon blend that we saw in the comic book run as his first introduction. Yeah, and that kind of white, red, white, and blue suit.
Sadly, I believe that we have seen spoilers from the toy line, so we kind of know what it might look like. And I was really hoping for a look at it by the end of this episode, but we'll see it next episode. So just wait a week. It's okay, guys.
Real quick on the Zemo Winter Soldier kind of back and forth there. And you said, you know, he's like, you're always a killer. That's who. And he kind of, you know, drops the bullets. And that's kind of that big scene that we've seen throughout the course of the trailers and everything like that. I still think that kind of got through to the Winter Soldier, though. And I wonder if he's going to be playing a role into this Thunderbolt series at all, or you know, Thunderbolt team up, whatever it's a movie or series or whatever it is. Because I think he realizes that Zemo's right. And it kind of bears out to be true by the end of the episode, is that, you know, Carly is accepting her role as a supremacist, as a villain, as a criminal, whatever you want to call her.
And what I was really hoping for was that we didn't see Zemo in these final two episodes and he was just out there. But this also leads into more Zemo anyway. So it's kind of like, you know, two in one hand, one in the other of, you know, I would have preferred if we just didn't know where Zemo was and he could pop up anywhere. Whereas now we know where Zemo will pop up.
We know that, right? Kind of understanding the fourth wall, but you know, you think he's locked away safe and key, you know, on the raft or whatever, but bear in mind, you know, Thunderbolt Ross could be recruiting him and everyone else around there, or however that works out. Or, you know, Valentina Allegra de Fontaine, whoever she is, you know, there could be, I don't know what the power structure is there.
So now we get to a real heavy conversation between Sam and Isaiah Bradley. And these are words that I believe Mac lives by, which is, if you aren't bitter, you're blind.
Yes. Yes, that's good. I think Keith also says something about that, right? Yeah. If it's not worth holding a grudge, you're not really mad then, mm-hmm. or something to that effect. Yeah, and I think, again, this is a very sensitive and emotional conversation that goes on. I'm not sure. I think it was very well worded. I'm not sure if we're really in the state to
He mentions a handful of them were shot up with different serums, and he was the one that lived. They experimented on him for 30 years until a nurse declared him dead so that he could get away.
Right, exactly. And then now, like, he's afraid to kind of pop back up and show back up because, you know, what is that going to mean for his life? What is that going to mean for, you know, yep. Elijah?
And then
he's got a little chip on his shoulder,
yeah.
you know? And
he says, pledge allegiance to that, my brother.
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
that line.
Patriot.
And then, you know, he kind of finishes it off by saying no self-respecting black man could want to be Captain America.
Right, exactly. And that, I think, has to kind of hit home to Sam. And it does, right? He goes home immediately after that to kind of, settle his thoughts, wait for the next move from Carly, and kind of be back with his family and kind of regroup a little bit.
Speaking of his family, why aren't his nephews more in awe of him? Like, they just kind of treat him like he's any old guy. If an Avenger was my uncle, I'd be asking them questions nonstop. I would be groveling at their feet. It would be so cool.
All they want to do is just, dang kids just want to play their video games all day, you know?
Dang kids with their video games.
Yeah, the video game. And also, this is a little bit, you know, a great moment that the whole community comes together, right? And Sarah kind of has this note about the stubborn kids who are hungry, but they're too prideful to ask for help. And then all of a sudden, Sam remembers that all, like, their parents were, like, you know, godsends to the town.
Well,
great helpers. Like, why didn't they do this before?
It was nice that they did this with the community and the neighborhood.
Right.
How much money do you think he would have raised if he started a GoFundMe page?
Absolutely, right?
Millions, right?
Like, if we like to compare universes on this other podcast that I do, Change My Mind. You know,
you're more popular Mackie, podcast.
Right, exactly. If Anthony Mackie is from The Night Before, right, where he's this, like, big football player with a huge social media following, all he has to do is just take out his phone, go live stream,
yeah.
and bam, you know, you get the Venmos open.
The government is holding down my family. Boom, that's a whole sector of people right there.
Exactly. But then you open up a whole nother can of worms. You know, are you a flag smasher at this point? You know, there's a whole lot of things there. But yeah, so that's a very cool moment. And then we see Bucky come back, too.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, Sam's sister, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Nice to see you. There were some butterflies floating around them.
I think. Sam even said, don't flirt with my sister.
That's true. Yes, it's a good point. Again, just I love their back and forth, their repartee, that buddy cop style.
Yeah.
Every time they kind of communicate in that kind of like light style ribbing, like, yeah, I just have like a big smile on my face the whole time.
Bucky leaves the Wakandan suit with Sam and he's like, I'm just going to leave this right here. Do with it what you want. And we mm-hmm. really don't get anything about that until the end of the episode. But we do then go to Lamar's parents' house, and John just straight up lies to them.
Straight up lies to him. And the only one who seems to be catching on to the lies is the sister, right? Mm-hmm. Lamar's sister is like, spends an awful lot of time on her. I don't know if that's just to bring home that, like, maybe they don't fully trust, like, the family doesn't fully trust him.
Yeah.
Or is she going to become like a character, like some sort of like vengeful villain or something like that? Or I don't know. Like, but you know, that's something to kind of keep an eye on.
So after this, Sam knows that he has to be Captain America, and we just get tons of SHIELD play, SHIELD montages, and we find out why Bucky was so upset with Sam.
It's just that SHIELD's closest thing I've got left to a family. So when you retired it, made me feel like I had nothing left.
What a sad life.
I know. Well, I mean, his whole life, his whole existence is really sad. Yes. I mean, he's just designed to be a killing machine and had his brain mushed around and, like, just gets dragged from one war to the other throughout history.
What do you think that family dinner is like? Quiet, right? Very one-sided conversation.
Him and the SHIELD?
Yeah.
It's like Wilson. He just has, like, a little bit of blood on his hand from his good hand over it. That's great. That's good stuff.
So then
stuff
we get
there.
Back into, like, the grief counseling of what Sam's character is. And, you know, hey, I predicted this. Goostradamus. But this really plays big mm-hmm. into the back end of this episode, where Sam then says, hey, you want some tough love?
I've been making amends.
You weren't amending, you were avenging. You were stopping all the wrongdoers you enabled as the Winter Soldier because you thought it would bring you closure.
And what does he really need to bring him closure?
I'm sure there's at least one person in that book who needs closure about something, and you're the only person who can give it to him.
How much time do you want spent on this in the final episode?
I was really disappointed. You know they're going to return to it at some point. I hate the fact that they're saving it for the season finale. I believe that Yuri, right, is the old guy's name, and, yeah, and the and his son there who he killed, you know, years ago while he was on a Winter Soldier mission.
The episode is 90 minutes long, and this is in the middle, first half of the middle of the episode, 3 to 4 minutes. We get it out of the way, fine. But if this is something that they're going to hang their hat on and end the episode with,
See, okay, so I can agree, like, 3 or 4 minutes, even, like, early throughout in the middle part, like, fine, I would be okay with that. See, I'm kind of the opposite, though, if I had to prefer one or the other. I want it at the end as a resolution where not major time is being spent, where he's just kind of closing in the final moments, that everything's kind of getting reconciled, and he's like, hey, Yuri, man, I'm sorry, I killed your son. And then he's like, it's okay, I knew all along, I've been waiting for you to say this. And then they have a hug and they kind of go on. And then
no,
it's like, whatever.
You know what I want to happen now? And here we go. Goostradamus, one more time.
Okay, lay it on me.
Yuri is Mephisto.
now I feel played. I got there.
So
got
once goofed. Bucky tells him that, he's like, yeah, fool's on you, sir. And then he turns into the devil.
He's like, what can I do to repay you? And he's like, give me your soul.
So that sounds like something the devil would say. Funny you should say that.
And then he snaps his finger and then just like turns into Mephisto.
So then we get like more of the SHIELD workout scene. Tons of flips, you know, flips and kicks. I like that.
A lot of flips, a lot of like parkour, mm-hmm, maybe like break dancing type stuff, yeah, you know, on like the hand type thing. That was really cool. And again, like when like Bucky and Sam are just like casually playing catch with the shield.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like having a toss back and forth. Like, you know, I kept trying to watch, like, how does it go on to the hand or to the forearm? You know, like, yeah, it just goes. But
yeah, because I assumed it was kind of like I thought it was kind of like a falconer, where like you hold out your wrist and the falcon comes to your arm and you're catching it like that.
Oh, well, that would make sense. I would like that. Maybe we have to ask Will Forte.
One of the kind of throwaway characters in this episode, kind of the forgotten character of this episode, is Carly, who is planning a bit of a terrorist attack. And that seems to be what episode 6 is going to focus on.
Yeah, exactly. This is going to be so, as Torres pointed out, all of the Flag Smasher little bings and stuff and mm-hmm pop-ups that they've had have all been overseas and in Europe. They just got one in New York City where at the GRC main building or somewhere where all the GRC officials are meeting to vote on this Patch Act, which would kick out like undocumented migrants slash like displaced bloppers, I guess.
Blip bloppers. It's blip bloppers.
Yeah, I think that's a technical term. You don't have to bother yourself with it. But you find out just the reach of these like NPCs that the Flag Smashers have, right? A couple clicks of the button and then all these people are ready to kind of like organize, including the security guards who kind of shut down everything mm-hmm in the building. And that's kind of the rising action to the series finale.
And then we do get a post-credit scene. First one. Or is this mid-credit technically?
Well, before that, actually, too, because we also get Batroc the Leaper, who comes into play here as like,
oh, yes, know, yes, yes.
They officially kind of assume that criminal role in the park.
I want Sam. Give me Sam.
I don't know what's in that briefcase, weapons, bombs of some sort, but you know, seems to be something like that. And that whole connection, you talk about someone who was kind of underserved in this episode. I mean, Sharon Carter, right? Very, very briefly in mm-hmm this. And if you keep on the subtitles, right, the closed captioning on it, she's talking to Batroc the Leaper on the phone. Ooh, so she organized this whole thing here. So is she the power broker? Again, I think that leads to further credence, further evidence of such. But I think that's almost too obvious. I don't know.
So he has a briefcase. Sam has a briefcase. I'm looking for a little briefcase fight in this final episode.
Last episode, briefcase boys. What do you think?
I love
it. Briefcase boys.
So Sam looks at the suit. He's like, oh, here we go. And then post-credit or mid-credit, I don't know what we want to call it, but John is making his own shield. And I just need to know, what is he making it out of? Because, you know, the real selling point of Cap Shield is that it's vibranium.
Right. So I wonder what it is. I mean, we see him melting down his Medals of Honors, right?
Which I think is cool. I thought that was a cool look.
Right, exactly. And it's like, you know, kind of burning, getting rid of, absolving everything of his past military life. And it's kind of like that nomad type of thing with Captain America, right? So I think that's very interesting. Of course, nods to the original Iron Man and the end credit scene there, right, with the hammer. Or not the end credit scene, but to Iron Man the and sound. The hammer making the new... Yeah, exactly. And the end credit of Endgame, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, was, like, correct.
Confusing the two. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think, again, where this was supposed to be the kickoff of Phase 4, right, this first thing, like, that is very fitting, right, to kind of have that in there, and this dawn of this next hero, villain, and whatever he's going to be.
So I guess we're now at the point where
I'll ask 21 questions, and they all about us.
Questions with a capital W-E-S. And Ooh. I guess I got one question of do you think that John fights alongside Sam in this next episode?
Yeah, see, I think he might pop in at a mid-critical point, and I think almost like he has a mission to kill the Flag Smasher, so, not to call back to, you know, another episode title or podcast title, but Enemy of My Enemy is My Frenemy, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier podcast powered by one half of the person who brought you Mac and Goo.
Correct.
That could actually close out and kind of pop in an opportune time, and then he breaks away before Sam can really get him under reins.
Because I think that John as the villain slash fighting Bucky or fighting Sam is now over. If he had won that original fight, then you're obviously setting up for a fight in the final episode. But they've already defeated him, and I think that he still thinks that he's trying to do good. So he will help here, but then kind of stray off a little bit.
Right, exactly. And are we going to see more from Valentina or answer that call or whatever that is? So I think, a little bit more information, Ooh. Not a whole lot, but just a little bit more.
So I think she'll pop up in a post-credit with Thunderbolt Ross. It'll be them two talking.
I like that. I like that. Here's a good question. Maybe this is what makes the show so great, but who's the villain of this show?
The Senator?
Right. It's I think depending on your vantage point, it could be a number of people. Right. And I think everyone's kind of compromised in some way, shape or form, which I think is kind of interesting.
Well,
even
I think the herd
degree of from the vantage point, the Flag Smashers is compromised. You know,
the herd has really rallied around John Walker being the villain, but he's kind of just a side villain. I mean, he's the big, obvious, like over the top villain of this. But really, he's not the villain of the show.
Right, so it's the Flag Smashers, right? It's Baron Zemo. You have Winter Soldier.
Zemo's not the villain. Zemo's the hero.
Again, it's kind of this huge collection of people who have done wrong, and depending on where you look, they could be the villains. And that's what I think the show has done such a good job of, is that it's dealing with a lot of real world social commentary issues, but not necessarily showing their hand or which way they may lean. I think, depending on which way you may fall on the side of the fence, you can get one thing out of this or another thing out of it.
Of course, one of her other podcast titles was Zemo, I'm a good guy now, the Falcon and Winter Soldier podcast.
Yes, and I think that's good. I think we have Billy just kind of working on these as we spit them out. So again, I think you alluded to this already, but the finale is clearly going to take place in New York City, a place ripe with superheroes and villains.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there's an Easter egg.
Yo, you saw that Easter egg?
And something that has to do with either Black Widow or something. I don't know where I saw this, and I could be completely off. But the Lady Liberty, the Statue of Liberty, is going to be holding a Captain America shield in the movie or something.
Oh, okay. All right. I like this. And Black Widow?
Yeah. I don't know. I saw something. So I guess give me half credit for not knowing what I'm sourcing.
All right. I like that, though. I think that could be good. I mean, this is a great opportunity. Again, if the power broker were to be someone like Kingpin, where is Doctor Strange for all of this in New York City? You have Spider-Man. You have all these heroes around there. If you're going to do the Thunderbolts, is someone like the Punisher going to be involved?
Ooh, hello.
I think other people who have been in the MCU who are linked to the Thunderbolts in the comics. We've already mentioned U.S. Agent, Zemo, Thunderbolt Ross, Winter Soldier, Taskmaster, Abomination.
Another Black Widow.
Exactly. Yeah, Abomination, who's going to be probably resurfacing in She-Hulk. Someone from Black Widow, is it Yelena Bovila or someone, one of the other women from there. And my personal favorite, Justin Hammer.
Ooh, hello.
Sam Rockwell.
So if we're looking at a final fight, this is my prediction. It's going to be Sam versus Carly, And I think that Carly's going to have the upper hand because she's got the super serum. And that's when John pops in and semi-saves Sam. And then it's the two of them versus her.
I think that's a good way to break it down. And I love the idea of possibly some sort of introduction of like an Iron Man, a Nick Fury introduction where it's like, hey, I want to start the Avengers, whether that's the Thunderbolt Ross or you know, Julie Louise Dreyfus' character kind of doing that in concert together. If it's this or Black Widow, I think that would be very likely for an end credit scene.
All right, Wes, anything else?
No, I think that's it. Yeah. I think, just get ready for 90 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, so I say, very quickly, I thought it was a good episode. Not my favorite, but I think if you're looking at compared to the other ramp-up episodes of episodes 1 and 2, better than those, but not as good as the action-packed episodes of episode 3 and 4.
Did you mention the bisque?